Yes, you're wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, it's an exciting day for us because, yes. One, I finished chemotherapy yesterday.
Claps,
thank you,
claps.
thank you. So now I get to wait a month and see if it worked. But
it
hopefully
seems like
it will.
They should be able to figure that out faster. Like, I don't understand.
Well, I guess it's just like all in your system. Like it's not like, oh, you go in and you do it and then it's like does its work and then you're fine. It's it's all just sort of percolating inside me. I'm like a big stew of chemicals at this point. Like the doctor said that it takes like over 6 months for everything to sort of like get out of your system.
Oh, interesting.
So I think it's like doing its work for a while. Okay. So yeah. So I go back in a month, then I have another appointment in July. So, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, everything goes well and everything's gone. The doctor told me that if I did have to get more treatment, it probably wouldn't be for a couple of years at the very least. So, that's nice.
Cute. Yeah, something to sit on. Something to look forward to.
Yeah, so hopefully I'm getting back to regular life soon. You know, still a little tired and stuff. Completely biffed it in the shower this morning, like, which had really nothing to do with anything, but I was like, wow, I feel old or sick or whatever. I'm like, now I'm falling in the shower, like ripping the curtain down. It's like, my gosh.
No.
I think my roommate just like
cancer.
Cleaned the tub and then like I got in and it was, you know, so I was just like, whoop.
Oh my gosh.
Anywho. But also probably more exciting for the masses is the fact that Taylor Swift released not one, but two, but maybe it's one unclear album this past Friday.
Yes, double album for once. The fans had it right, I guess.
Did they?
Hoped for it.
I mean,
yeah, she'd been like teasing all these like twos, like she does peace signs and photos, and she's like,
my gosh, I've been teasing a double album for years.
I know. And I was like, this is ridiculous. You guys thought it was going to be a double album for Evermore. You thought it'd be a double album for Midnights. You thought there'd be a side B to 1989 Taylor's version. So they've been throwing this at the wall for quite a while, and it finally stuck at 2 a.m. on release day when she's like, here you go, 31 tracks total.
She did this before, though, at some point, didn't she? Where she, like, a couple hours into the thing was like, oh, here's more stuff.
Yeah, she did, like, a deluxe version of Midnights, but that was only an additional, like, four songs or something.
Okay.
So a little bit more of your standard expectation around a deluxe.
Because this is 31 songs.
Yeah.
And it totals over 2 hours. All of the songs on the album are, with the exception of one of them, I think, is over, or maybe two, are over 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So they're not like short songs. It's not like Beyonce's album where there's like a lot of interstitial kind of things. These are like full songs, like 31 full songs.
Yeah.
Over 2 hours.
How did you feel?
I mean, I obviously did not stay up to listen to this. I was not going to do that. And I think I woke up to a text from you that was like, it's a double album, have fun.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh gosh. And then I sort of opened Spotify and saw the 31 tracks and the 2 hours. And I was like, oh gosh, like this is going to be, like, this is going to be tough.
Your dream come true.
Well, and I was just like, you know, like, the way that I normally listen to albums, especially of albums that have people who I don't, like, care about all that much, is, you know, sort of, I listen through it once, pick my favorite songs, save those on Spotify, and then probably don't listen to the album all the way through again. So it sort of doesn't bother me. With this because we're doing this episode on it, and, you know, it's like I have to pay more attention to these things. I have to, you know, have talking points and stuff. I can't just sort of like throw it on in the background. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is so going to be so exhausting. But I was like, let me give it like a first listen, sort of assess the vibes, and then we can sort of go back and do a deeper dive. And I think after I had listened to it once, or maybe not even all the way through, I texted you and I was like, okay, there, like, I am physically incapable of doing a track by track dive on this, because there is no way that I'm going to be able to tell all of these songs apart. Like, these songs are all
deep cuts,
so similar. They are all giving the same energy. A lot of them are talking about sort of similar subjects. I was like, it's tough when it's a Taylor album that has 16 songs on it to sort of be able to separate them all out. And this, I was like, I just, like, one, that would be a super long episode, but two, I was like, I just cannot, like, I'm not going to be able to tell you the difference between Guilty as Sin and The Prophecy. Like, I just cannot pull this information out of my mind. So I was like, we will be conducting this episode in a more vibes, holistic, macro sense.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that too, because I'll admit my first reaction to this was not positive. I was also distracted. So it was like a wedding weekend and I was hoping I'd have something, you know, maybe a little bit more, not upbeat per se, because I knew this would be a breakup album, but, you know, something with a little bit more heat to it, a little more flavor. But yeah, it's much more, as they say, vibey, and it does start to blend together if you're binging it. And so I was kind of like irritated by its presence in my mind and my weekend, because I was like, I have to listen to this, but it's not necessarily like easy to listen to. And so I kind of resented it, but I have come around. I feel like such a stan, like I've just been blinded by the light, but I do appreciate some of what she's attempting here and doing. I think it is too long, and I want to say that with my full chest. Like, I can appreciate the urgency of just like processing this all and giving people what they want, and you write music and that's cool, and like you have nothing else going on in your life, so why wouldn't you just create song after song? But I do think that it would have stood out stronger for me, and probably for some more casual critics, if she had tapered it down just a bit, because I do end up liking the songs like on their own, but if I put it on shuffle, I'll start to be like, oh, this is the, you know, How Did It End, and then I'm like, oh wait, no, it's not, it's the, you know, Alchemy or whatever, or, you know, like I haven't been able to separate them yet. But I heard someone say that this is less like a sugar rush and more like a savory wine, a savory meal, if you will. You're meant to enjoy it, take it as you need it, really sit with it, do your full siesta. You know, this is a 9-hour course, and that helped me process it too.
And I appreciate the Swifties, including Rob Sheffield, who wrote his, you know, review for the Rolling Stone or whatever, but of like coming up with ways to make this actually seem like, oh yeah, no, this is actually a masterpiece if you think about it. It's sort of like she's being so chaotic and so similar, she like wants to the fans to think that it's all the same, but then it's not, but it sort of is if you look at it close enough and then back up and then spin around, it's actually brilliant all along. And it's like, okay, sure, girls. No, I will talk about, I feel like we should save the like public reaction of this for like further on in the episode, because there's a lot I want to get into. Sort of about the Taylor Swift, sort of where she is in her career and public opinion of her, etc. Because there's been some interesting articles I think that have come out since the release about that. But just in general, I feel like my take on the actual album itself and the songs is, yes, it's obviously too long. And I think that she would have been much better served. I mean, I've been complaining about the lengths of her albums for a bit now. Yeah, and those are ones, you know, that are half the length of this. And albums that I think are better and have more different sounds in them. But
well, to be fair, you hated Midnights.
Right. No, I did not like Midnights. But Midnights, I think, is way better than this.
Oh, really?
Okay. Like, I think this is her worst album that I've heard.
And that's based on content or just the 31 track itself?
I think it's based on a number of things. First, this is something that you notice a lot in publishing with authors. This is something that you notice in film. Sort of once a director or writer becomes a really big star and a big deal, they start taking less and less criticism from the other people around them before they put out their work. That's why you get these books that are, you know, thousands of pages long and confusing.
Like Stephen King.
Well, I mean, yes, like Stephen King, like some of his books needed some edits, but also, like, you know, if you're reading Finnegan's Wake or some of these like books by sort of late stage authors, or like M. Night Shyamalan or Martin Scorsese, even, like, they just sort of get high on their own supply to a certain degree, where they think, like, I am a genius. Like, therefore, if somebody says, hey, maybe you should tweak this, maybe you should make this shorter, they're like, no, you don't understand the vision. Like, I'm a genius, you're not. Like, calm down. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a little bit of that going on with Taylor Swift here, where it's like she has all these fans who are supportive of her. She's growing increasingly sort of like sequestered in her songwriting. Like, there's only it's basically her, Jack Antonoff, and Aaron Dessner as the songwriters on these. Like, it's a very small group of people, I'm sure, who are working on this album. And so I think that there's not those extra voices in the process, and there's not like record executives and stuff. Like, I'm sure she delivers the album, and Universal or whoever it is who's the label is like, yeah, great, sure. They're not like, hey,
control. Yeah,
this is too long. And so I just think that probably some of the pushback in earlier albums was not there for this.
Yeah.
And so she has this like bloated, extra long album. And also the fans are always like, we want more music, we want more music. Mm-hmm. So she's like, oh, perfect. Like, I'll give you all 31 of these, when in actuality, she could have easily chopped half of it and just given the best 16.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a much better album. I think also she seems to be working at a faster pace, perhaps, than she has in the past. Like, we thought that this album, well, she said when she announced it at the Grammys that she had been working on it for 2 years.
Yeah.
But then it appears that a lot of the songs are about Maddie Healy, and their relationship was this past summer, correct?
Yeah.
So like, at least for some of the songs here, there was sort of a faster turnaround.
Well, and there's some about Travis Kelce. So.
Right. Yeah. So it's just like, that means that there's a sort of like rushing to the process. And I think the more time you have to sit with things, the more you can be like, okay, you know what? Actually, like, I thought this was a really great song, but now that I'm sort of listening to it, it doesn't really fit here. And so I think those, but again, she's sort of working at this frenetic pace where she's like, I think that she feels she is in like the biggest moment of her career, which she is, and she's sort of like the center of the zeitgeist. So she's like, well, let's just do more stuff. And I think that sometimes you need to take a break.
I think it's also like, I think this has been looking at her psychology, right? Like, this has been a reset for her as far as being like much more private with Joe, attempting that way of navigating the public eye, going super public, having a backlash happen that didn't destroy her in the same way as the Snakegate and Kim of it all. And so I thinking too of like what she was saying about what she wanted and thought about fame in the Miss Americana documentary and how that didn't really like stick. And so what did, and what is she taking away from it? I think this album served as sort of a bookend to that messy, like what's happening with Taylor type of thing. Because I do think it is just her processing things. And not that that means she should have released the 31 songs, but more I can see a point of view where she's like, you know what? Everyone's on my ass about how I feel about this, how I feel about that. Like, everyone's telling me who to date, who not to date. Everyone's watching, blah, blah, blah. And earlier in my career, I could just play coy and be like hidden messages in liner notes and like, oh, I don't talk about who my songs are about type thing. But now we all know she came off of a 6-year relationship with Joe. Everyone wants to know about it. And she's navigating this place where she doesn't want to be like the good girl anymore. And she wants to be more open about who she is, but then she also doesn't know who she is. And so I think this was a lot of like processing. This was a lot of therapy for her. And not to say that she wasn't also trying to, you know, make a buck. But I think it came at such an interesting time in her, in the cross section of her personal life and her public success, that it was like, I full-heartedly believe that she had like 700 songs on the cutting room floor. And these were the ones that she felt like were the best to feed her children with. And I think this is an album that's maybe more for the fans, especially in how pointedly aggressive she gets towards them in some of her songs, that I think it's like, you know, she needed to feed the vultures just to let her finally close the chapter.
Yeah, I, because she said somewhere or another that, yeah, that this, that she had to, like, she sort of had to get this out of her system. And I understand that from, like, a writing point of view, but I don't understand that from a publishing point of view.
Editor.
Like, yes, it's like.
Well, she's like the Brandon Sanderson of songwriting. Like, that's really how I've felt about her. And, like, it either works for people or it doesn't. And Brandon Sanderson has huge fans and people who think his work is great. And, like, I read a book that he wrote in 5 months and I was like, you know, pleasantly surprised that it wasn't awful, because I'm so used to like self-publishing people being like bad. But I think there's just this level of artist where they just want to churn out work. And, you know, there's a hit and a miss for sure, but more often than not, it hits the right point, at least for their specific fandom.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can get into sort of what the fans reacted to this. I think that there's a problem with the quantity of the songs, but I also think that there's a problem with the quality of the songs mm-hmm. as well, where, I mean, one, they're all very similar, or a lot of them are. They have a very similar sound, and they also sound similar to things that she's already done, which isn't to say that, you know, not everybody is going to revamp themselves with every album. And, you know, Taylor Swift has done that on multiple occasions, but this yeah. doesn't really seem like that was her goal here. But also, I think that the, like, just the songwriting itself seems a bit sloppy. Like, there's a lot of mixed metaphors. There's a lot of words and lyrics crammed into these songs.
Mm-hmm. Very clunky.
Yeah, they sort of, like, one of my... The one of the ones that I like better and have listened to more is like The Bolter, which is later on. And the more I listen to it, the more I'm sort of like, what exactly? Like, I sort of in general understand what she's saying, but like when you actually sort of pick apart the metaphors, it's like, wait, this is kind of confusing and mixed and probably like could have used sort of a yeah. polish or something. And I think that a lot of the songs have that going on. I also yeah,
like
think
I still don't know what Fortnite is about. Like, I literally can't wrap right. around it.
Yeah, exactly. There's just but I think also she really reacted to the success of the All Too Well like 10-minute version, which has so many specific details in it. And so I think she added a lot more of that kind of like storytelling-y sort of things in here, which work in some cases, but in a lot of cases just kind of feel clunky. And then also I think have been the source of some of the album's more criticized lines, where she's talking about how, oh, her and her like lover thought that Charlie Puth should have been a bigger name. And it's like, that's just a weird like thing to sort of have in a song. Or people have really been going after her for this line about how she wants to live in the 1830s but without the racists. It's like why is this here exactly?
To be fair, she didn't say she wanted to. She said I'm not going to stand that song. I hate that song. But I just, I want the record to show that we're not spreading
fake What did news she
too.
Say?
She said, so the whole premise of the song is like nostalgia is a drug and it's dangerous and like nothing's as good as you remember it being. And she uses this example of the game, you know, like, oh, when would you want to be alive? Like, when would you want to be born? And I was always like, oh, 1912. I love the Titanic, you know, like that sort of mm-hmm. thing. And in the song, she's like, so I kill the buzz by being like, well, there were racists. You remember that? And like child bride. So like, is it really that good? And I wouldn't want to go back there actually anyways. But I don't think she's someone who can be trusted with the delicacies of an anti-racist yes. message hidden in that. And I think that was a complete misstep and cringe at the very most and kind of white feminist-y, dumb, problematic at the very least. So,
yeah, I think that another issue with this album, at least in my regard, is sort of like when it came out in the pantheon of music of like mm-hmm. we have had all of, and not to be like, oh, we gotta compare female artists or whatever, but we've had a fall or a spring of a lot of really strong albums from people, or you know, we had Ariana Grande, Maggie Rogers, Beyonce, and other people, you know, like Billie Eilish has released some singles. Like there's, I think that there's just, we have seen a lot of sort of very different approaches to how to release an album. And you have somebody like Maggie Rogers who releases like only 10 songs, which I think are all pretty strong. And like, and you know that she wrote way more songs than that, but just like trimmed it down to that yeah. level. And then you have somebody like Beyonce who releases an album that is longer, but definitely has a lot more sort of structure to it, and it feels like there's a lot more I mean, like, one, there's a lot of variance in the music, but also there's sort of a story or a flow to it more, where this kind of feels like it's just a bunch of songs that could sort of have been placed in almost any order, which I don't yeah. think is some, which I feel like Taylor Swift usually has more thought going on than this album sort of suggests, you know? Like, I think something like 1989 has more of a, or Reputation too, has more of like a, okay, we're starting here and we're moving on and there's like these varying tones and stuff. Like, it just, it feels more thought out as yeah, a full album, where this just yeah. feels like she wrote 100 songs. She said, these are the 31 best. And then she just sort of like put them in, you know, picked them out of a hat almost.
I can see that, but I don't fully agree. And I think Taylor's brand has always been sort of like, you know, the diary entries, the diaristic, like, oh, I'm on a journey and like, this is how I feel. And then she slowly, like, she starts off with something like Fortnite, which is like, I'm so in love, I don't give a what these people say about it, and like, screw my ex, I need this guy who I've been thinking about, he's been my what if, my if only, the one. And then by the end of the first track, she's singing, oh, this is the smallest man to ever live, and like, actually I'm going to sing the alchemy about my little boy Travi and like his good old league, and like, you know, like, so there is a journey there. And I think the second half, which she does mainly with Aaron Dessner, who is her collaborator on Folklore and Evermore, is a lot more kind of like metaphysical, like kind of removed from the literal details. Whereas the first half, you have them name dropping like their friends, Lucy and Jack, and you have her citing specific instances where her fans overstepped in her opinion or whatnot. Whereas the second half seems more kind of metaphorical, or kind of exploring the emotions of those literal events rather than detailing the angst that drove them.
I do think that the second album is stronger than the first album. Agreed. Which I think is interesting, that that is sort yeah. of like the supplemental material, whereas
yeah.
the first part is the, and I feel like that's a generally common sentiment among fans, that they like yeah. the second album better, which is yeah sort of odd.
I mean, that's what's so fascinating about Taylor, is she's always like, she's, you know, picks the worst singles or whatever you want to say. Like, there's this part of her that seems like she has to present like the spiciest stuff first. And no matter how many times we prove that doesn't always work, like we always have fan favorites or whatever, it's almost like she's trying to build this like exclusive club by like hiding the best songs just for her true fans. And that creates a sort of like fervor to be in on it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, you don't get it because you only like her popular stuff. But I don't know if that's like the best strategy or even necessarily intentional. Because yeah, I agree. I think even the production that Aaron Dessner brings matches this a little better, because obviously the full album is stripped back a lot compared to something like Midnight's or Reputation or even Folklore, where she was playing a little bit more with a new sound. This is very much like lyrics first, melody second. And so it's like bare bones instrumentation. And I think that works better in Aaron Dessner's hands than with Jack Antonoff on a keyboard, you know?
Well, I also think that one of the things, I'm not sure that I agree with that, like, sort of reading that, oh, she's sort of like hiding the better stuff for the fans. Like, I think that she is just in such an insulated world that she sort of loses concept of like what people will like. I don't think she has
that's
a
been
good...
true in every album, is what I mean.
Right. Yeah. And I think that maybe she just like does not have great taste.
Yeah. That's probably part of it. But I think like, it's also, like releasing a 31 track album. It's like, yeah, this isn't going to win a Grammy. Like, it's too long. It's bloated. Everyone's saying that. But I think she recognizes that she's secure in her fandom, right? Like, she's not as anxious when she was doing something like 1989, where now she's like, okay, like, these people want it. They'll consume it. Like, I'll give it to them. And then the question is she putting Fresh Out the Slammer on the first half because it's more news generating than something like Robin, which is like, what are we talking about now? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sort of interested to see how she responds to all of this, which I guess, again, we can get into when we start talking about like the criticism of the album, where she like put this out, and I'm interested to see, and we'll probably maybe never learn, like, did she think that this was going to reach universal acclaim? Did she sort of think that this wasn't going to do well, but she like needed to get it out anyways? Like, what were her kind of thoughts or expectations releasing this?
I think part of it is like, cause she released this epilogue with the album. The physical album has like a liner note in it. And that in itself is a poem that sort of gives context for every song. And then like with her release of the anthology, she's like, this is a chapter closed. Like, these aren't mine now, it's yours. And I really do think, whether it works or not, I think she was someone who's sitting at the top of the mountain she never thought she'd get to. Everyone loves her. She's sold out stadiums, blah, 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 blah. Nothing but positive acclaim. Everyone's excited to see who she's dating. It's like the love affair of the ages, you know? And she's like, well, I don't want to get in a place where I feel constricted again by how people view me and what people want from me. And so she processes this very messy, complicated image of herself, where she's singing love songs to a total douche that no one likes. And she's admittedly coming to terms with the fact that he's not good, but it's not for the reasons we all hated him, right? It's because she felt betrayed by him, not because he was a racist dick. And so I think she's just trying to allow herself space to be her own problematic self instead of falling back into those perfectionist tendencies that she reflected on in Miss Americana. And like, if she was to release an album that isn't going to be universally acclaimed, like, now is the point to do it because she has status to spare. And if anything, this just allows her more freedom in the future, because it's like she's kind of like taking herself down a couple notches so that we don't tear her down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I understand the, because I feel like this happens with like authors and also directors and stuff sometimes too, where it's like they'll have a really big success, and then rather than try to follow that up with something that tops it, they go in a completely different direction and sort of do something that they know won't get the same reception, just because they kind of like want to move on and get out from under that like spotlight. But I also don't know if I believe that Taylor Swift is that kind of person, because at the same time she's releasing these double albums and this stuff and releasing all these vinyls so that she can get all of these records she feels so like obsessed with. And that for me is not giving like, oh, like this is, I just kind of need to process this or whatever. Like that's for me is saying like, oh, I still like have all of these, you know, weird numerical things that I'm obsessed with and I need to accomplish.
For sure. The but other that's thing, because she'll make the money, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The other thing that I think, which I didn't really like verbalize myself up to this point, but someone else was talking and I was like, wait, actually this makes a lot of sense. And I do think this is sort of the fault of her critics along the way. But she feels it's so important for her to have this be her own thing that she did by herself. Like she is always talking about how she's the songwriter and she's the only songwriter and she, you know, directed the videos, she wrote the video. Like she is like, I did all of this myself. Like
individualistic.
Yes, it's like very individualistic, very much like this is my work, this is my work alone. Like she has Jack Antonoff and Aaron Dessner as collaborators, but it's like it's very specific. It's a very small group. She's sort of gotten rid of the people who had been more involved early on in the process. And I think that she sees that and a lot of her fans see that as a positive. Like, look at how talented she is. She can do this all by herself. And I think for the first time, somebody I followed on Twitter or whatever was like, writing all of the songs yourself, like, is not the flex that you think it is. Like, making an album is a group effort. It is something that most artists are doing with a large group of collaborators. They're bringing different people in. They've got a lot of different songwriters on tracks. Like, yes, you don't want to be sort of like the person who maybe she thought she was early, or people thought she was early on, where it's like you're just like a prop for the studio, like you're just a pretty face and they give you these songs and you record them. But I feel like now at this point in her career that she's done so much, I think she still has that chip on her shoulder, but it's like, I think that she has succeeded enough that she hopefully can move past that and start like bringing people into the fold to give different perspectives rather than sort of continuing to isolate herself. Because I feel like with this album, it just feels so much like it needed some fresh air in there from other songwriters, other producers, other instruments. It needed some samples. It needed some, you know, other singers. Like, even with the Post Malone track, it's like we got... I was listening to it and I was like, oh my gosh, is she doing the exact same thing again where she's just going to have Post Malone sing backup lyrics the entire time? And in like the last 20 seconds, he comes on and like sings a little bit of his stuff by himself. But I'm just like, she needs more like ideas coming in, because there's only so many ideas that one person can come up with. And I think for something that is as... like, if you're writing a book, it's different. But I think for making an album, like, there's lots of instruments and sounds and techniques and things, and you don't know how to do all of that. Like, you need other people. Even if she wants to write all of the lyrics and sort of, like, come up with the stuff generally, it's like, I think she needs more people to sort of challenge her and add more to the mix. I mean, not to like, her and Beyonce are doing very different things, but if you look at the Beyonce track list, it's like there's dozens of people listed for these things. Like, she is, you know, calling up the Beach Boys and asking them for a sample and then including them as songwriters on the album. Like, there's just and you can see with the breadth of music that's on that album, like, one person could not come up with that. Like, it requires a lot of different talent and a lot of different energy. And I think that Taylor Swift needs more than just her and Jack Antonoff in a room with a keyboard to be able to come up with that.
Well, I mean, that's what it's like. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's it's like Post Malone is featured, but he's featured on Taylor Swift's song. That is not a Post Malone and Taylor song. Like, there's no way I believe that Post Malone was heavily involved in the idea, the writing, or the production of it. And that's how she's been doing her features. And that's what's like annoying, because I do think that if you look at her career, like when she was playing around with Max Martin and Shellback, or when she, you know, first started working with Jack, or when she first started working with Aaron Dessner and The National or whatever, there was a lot more playfulness and exploration of music. And I think she, yeah, I think that's definitely 100% a either blind spot or point of pride or kind of a point of resistance for her when she finds her people. She's like, well, I just want to work with my friends. I just want to work with my friends. I don't trust people. I don't want to risk, you know, the hurt again, or whatever it is that's the psychosis she's constantly in. But it's like, yeah, it's a frustrating thing, because I do agree that she presents more as a novelist than maybe a director like you get with Beyonce. But it's like, when she's doing this amount of work and wanting to explore this amount of genres, it feels like she should be more open to other artists exploring in the space instead of being so overprotective and even antagonistic towards people and the inspiration around, or the, you know, because I think about like Adele. I don't know Adele's thing. And I think this album is Taylor trying to be like, maybe not intentionally, but there's parallels more to Adele, where she's like, well, I am more mature. I do have like songs and sounds and poetry to explore that maybe isn't as cliche or tried or childish as my earlier stuff or whatever. But then it's like, you can see the psychological trauma that she's taking on more than anyone else, where she's like defensive of her line. And I think there's also this like paranoia of people taking what's hers, which is the most unattractive quality about her. Because like, I mean, even the Olivia Rodrigo thing, or like the drama there of like Cruel Summer somehow being enough of an involvement in Olivia Rodrigo's track to deserve Taylor Swift's like name on it. I don't know. Like, it's like, I don't like that part of her, because I think it does come from a very insecure place.
Well, yeah. Okay. So I don't know how I missed the Olivia Rodrigo drama. I like knew that they were in a beef, but I didn't realize the songwriting credit thing until I read an article this week about how like, yeah, Olivia Rodrigo came out with, what was it? Deja Vu. Is that the song that supposedly, so she came out with Deja Vu, and her and Taylor had been, you know, close. Taylor had been praising Olivia Rodrigo. Olivia Rodrigo had been this huge fan. And then after the album came out, like sort of out of nowhere, Taylor Swift got added as a writer to the credits for Deja Vu. And it's like, well, she obviously wasn't involved in the actual writing of the song. Like, there were just enough notes off of Cruel Summer that were similar to what Olivia Rodrigo wrote that Taylor Swift's legal team could somehow get her added as a credit. And I saw that now 50% of the proceeds of that song are going to the Taylor Swift camp, which is just crazy, because it's not like Deja Vu is 50% Cruel Summer or something, or Taylor Swift like co-wrote it. It's like at very best like a loose influence. And I think for somebody who is, you know, a billionaire to be trying to siphon money off of like teenage up and coming artists is a little bit like, huh, like what?
That's it. Like, that's what makes why are we me doing so this? Fascinated by her. Like she's some, like even like in this album, it's sort of hinted at with Clara Bow, this like song that's about, you know, everyone looking for the next it girl and like feeling like, oh, you're like her, but you're better type thing. And how that's wielded as a compliment when it really just tears down whoever came before you. And it's like, she's clearly paranoid of being like replaced or whatnot. And she, her final verse is basically like, someone's going to one day say you're like Taylor Swift, but better. And it's like, okay, but you gotta chill out. Like, I honestly, I find that to be the most fascinating, like, crack in her armor or her persona is this, like, she wants to be like, no one was nice to me. No one, like, believed in me. No one stood up for me. And then she turns around and is the same way to these up and coming stars, where she's like very protective of her space or her creative process. And it's like, well, Taylor, like, this is an opportunity to be better. And it's just like, for whatever reason, that is a trigger point for her. And I find it so fascinating. And that makes me curious about what she'll do as her career progresses. Because in this album, she sings a lyric about how, is it Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, where she's like, oh yeah, and I'll sue you just for stepping on my lawn. Like, there's this self-awareness, but it's also sort of this entitlement towards feeling that sort of protective anger. I want to sit down and know. I want to know exactly how that conversation happened, like what went down, who started it type thing, because it's probably my favorite celebrity beef.
So I just looked up the Adele, like, 25 track list from that album. And it's her, obviously, is a writer on all of the tracks, but it's with tons of different people. Like, basically every song has different people involved, and then there's producers on top of that. I mean, I think that the old adage of hurt people is definitely going on with Taylor Swift. Like, yeah. I do not think that Taylor Swift is a good person. I think that whether that is because of just like who she is naturally, or because she was sort of stilted by getting fame too soon, or if it was because everybody sort of was out to get her at the beginning of her career, I don't know, like, where that sort of, or just, you know, being rich makes everybody terrible. But she, I think that her fans really want, and she, her fans really want her to be this lovely person. And she wants people to think that that is who she is. But I feel like, just as somebody who, like, is assessing the vibes, I'm like, this, the vibes are terrible with her. And I think one of the more interesting, or, you know, provocative songs on the track list is the Kim Kardashian song,
Thank You Amy,
where she capitalizes the letter Kim, and it's all about how this person bullied her in high school, and now that she's older, she's like writing these songs, and that the songs are about this person, this bully, but she changes the name, and that someday the bully's kids are going to be singing the songs, and the bully is going to know that they're about her, but that nobody else will know. But then she capitalizes the letter Kim in the headings, or in the title, so it's like, okay, this seems like it's obviously about Kim Kardashian and the sort of like snake gate thing. But at this point, it's like, okay, that was so long ago. Like, and she gets close to self-awareness in the song, where she kind of says like that she knows that she wouldn't be at the place that she is without going through that. But then, rather than sort of like a, like, okay, that kind of sucked, but we're moving on, and I, you know, like, recognize that that was an important thing that happened to me, even if it was sort of crappy at the moment, and giving like a new perspective, she loops back around to her old one and is like, ah, like, I hope that this revenge gets you, like, through the form of your children, which I'm like, girl, like, we just have to, like, we have, like, this is, it's so petty that it's all, that it's comedic, but it's also like, Taylor, like, you are a billionaire with this massive empire, like, stop worrying about a song lyric that somebody's ex-husband wrote eight years ago.
It wasn't about the song lyric. It was Kim, the edited phone call.
Right. But still, I mean, that's like, the reason why Taylor Swift was upset was because of supposedly the made that bitch famous line. But it's like,
I mean, I like the idea that that in itself is red herring, and she's actually singing about Kylie Kloss. So,
well, yes. I mean, I also like that point of view, but it's like, I mean, if it turned out that that Taylor Swift was just doing all of this because she was still spiraling about being in love with Karlie Kloss and that she was a lesbian and she didn't know how to process that, yeah. I'm like, okay. Like, then I think that whenever she came out, that would free her up in so many ways. But I'm beginning to lose hope that that is actually the point of view. And I think that she's actually just sort of like a crappy straight white woman.
I had a friend once
who sort of slighted her in some capacity.
Yeah.
And that's it. And Karlie Kloss is like, I am moved on. Like, I do not care. Whatever. I'll go to her concert and sit in the nosebleeds. Like, doesn't bother me. And Taylor Swift is still like, somebody in 1993 slighted me in line at the grocery store.
I love it. I mean, I agree, right? Like, I've had to come to terms with Taylor Swift not necessarily being someone I admire, but I do find her to be someone who's just, like, she hasn't crossed into that harmful line for me. Like, it's very contained into her little drama for the most part. And I find it fascinating and entertaining. And I do think that part of the charm is, like, her maybe even unintentional honesty. And I think that that's what ended up working for me on this album is that she does not come across great in this album. And I admire that she did that. I admire that she let go of at least some part of this, like, yes, a lot of the songs are still woe is me, but there's an angle of viciousness and cattiness and sort of entitlement to it that I find so much more compelling than maybe some of her, like, more overtly, he's the bad guy, I'm just the poor old me girl. And so, honestly, I want to give her props. I don't know if it was intentionally, like, look at me, I'm a battered person who has problems. But I find
that's
it great.
Big. Is like, there, like, she is so fascinating, and like listening to her music and just following her career is endlessly entertaining because she is such a interesting character. But you never know if she's like in on the joke or not. She really releases this album and she comes across so badly in so many ways, but it's like, is this sort of an Andre Agassi memoir where he's like, I used to be a drug addict and obsessed with my hair and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And like, I see that now and I'm pointing that out to you to show you. Or is this like, she's still lost in the woods and she thinks that she's giving this album that's like skewering these people who have been mean to her. And it's actually like, no, you just look like a crazy person who's a billionaire who's talking about how they're a tortured poet and they're going after, you know, 15-year-old Disney Channel stars.
I think it's, well, that, you know, she's not 15 and that's not really a part of this. But I do think the theme of this album and the sort of like crumbling of Joe and her becoming hyper fixated on the crumbling of Maddie instead is a really like thoughtful and kind of intelligent, emotionally intelligent look at that sort of like rebound. Which you don't get played a lot. Usually the rebound is like, oops, you know. But instead she's like really eviscerating Maddie. But then in the end, it's sort of like, well, actually, this is the baggage that was bothering me about Joe. But it hurts more coming out of it and thinking I was away from that only to get slapped in the face with it again.
Like, what do we think, though, is going on with the Joe situation? Like, did she not write any songs about him, or like did she write them and they were bad?
I think
like,
there's a lot of them are interchangeable here. And I think it's also important to remember that her relationship with Joe has been basically like we got it off, right? Like, so Reputation actually has a lot about Joe, but we didn't know it. Or like there's a lot of love songs about Joe on Reputation, but then this album Lover actually has a lot of anxiety songs about Joe and like if their relationship is good. And Folklore and Evermore, which were pitched as this like totally fictionalized camp, does tend to seem in retrospect to have a lot of Joe influences. And so you do see a lot of Joe in this album as she's talking about, you know, like, oh, I tried to change myself to fit. He was like the homegrown flower and I was the outdoorsman. Like there's elements of Joe throughout this. And I think that's what makes it a a good slow burn of an album, like going back to these songs and picking up on these little details that paint a bigger picture, that add to the broad strokes of her previous albums. But I think Maddie Healy and sort of the flash in the pan drama of their personal relationship and then the public reaction to that made it like that was the final straw, right? Like that was the last of it. But he is on here. I mean, obviously So Long London, obviously how did it end? I think there's a lot on there, but I think it comes down to, well, you know, 6 years isn't a bad relationship. Like things didn't work out and they tried too long, but ultimately he wasn't like destroying her innocence like John Mayer or being her first heartbreak like Jake Gyllenhaal, or leading her on to think like, oh, I can leave the 6 year relationship because I found my forever with Maddie. You know, so there's like more of a forgiveness, I think, in how that relationship didn't actually work out, because I think there's more of a responsibility she takes on in saying, well, it probably never was meant to work, but there were so many things happening in her life that pushed them together, kept them together, and had her wanting to like make herself small just to cling to him a little longer.
Hmm.
So she takes responsibility maybe for how that relationship fizzled, whereas Maddie, she just fully middle fingers up, like hates him, blames him, and will eviscerate him for the rest of time.
Well, I also wonder, like Joe Alwyn just seems like such a kind of boring person. And the reasons why that relationship didn't work seem like they're mostly that he didn't really like want to be in the spotlight that much, and she did. And so I do kind of also wonder of like, it's hard to really like get too angry about that. And it doesn't, like, it seems like he's sort of a nice, fine person, where like Maddie Healy feels like it's a lot easier to kind of soup up some emotions on. And yeah, so I wonder if that's also part of it. But okay, let's get into the responses to the album, because I think that it's been interesting to watch the like initial like really quick reviews of the album. I think were very positive. Like there was a lot of like, oh my gosh, this is incredible, like one of her best sort of vibes. And I remember being like, what is going on? Like, are we listening to the same album? But it was almost like everybody was, it's kind of like the Emperor's New Clothes kind of a thing, where like, because Taylor Swift's fans had gone after so many people in the previous album cycles for not being into it, that everybody, I think, was sort of a little bit scared and didn't want to be the first person to kind of like say they didn't like it. No, because so the, a couple of sites like ran negative reviews of the albums without the authors' names on them because of, you know, death threats that people had gotten from Swifties in previous album release cycles. And I think that once sort of some people on Twitter started being like, this is bad, right? That then everybody was kind of like, yeah, okay. Like, needed to be edited.
Well, then your beloved journalism is dead if it's just like people are cowering and waiting for someone to say mid.
I just think that people didn't like, I think that there are some people who drank the Kool-Aid. But I think that there are people who did not necessarily like want to like say that it was bad with their full chest.
Yeah.
Initially. And so kind of like were tiptoeing around the issue until everybody kind of like, I think, came to a consensus that this wasn't necessarily her best work. Because then the New York Times ran its review, which is like, this needs to be edited down, which I think is a fairly like common sentiment regarding the album now. But then they also released this article called Taylor Swift Has Given Fans a Lot, Is It Finally Too Much? And the slug of it is Taylor Swift Fatigue. And it's just sort of all about how she's done all of this stuff and how fans, or not even necessarily fans, but just kind of like the general public is a little bit like, okay, we've had enough. Like, it's time to be done.
The New York Times just knows that bridge has burned ever since the Gaylor op-ed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're and like, I... Well.
Well, we might as well just say how nobody really likes this. But I thought it is fascinating because I do feel like it sort of signals somewhat of a turn for Taylor Swift. Like,
so
I think,
said.
Well, I think that the, like, I think that every artist, every celebrity, like, has a high point of their career where you can sort of look to and be like, okay, like, this was the moment where they were on top. And not that they have to have, like, a complete fall like Taylor Swift did with the Snakegate kind of thing.
Yeah.
But just, like, there is a, like, you know, Jennifer Lopez had a moment where she was peak. That is not any longer. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Madonna.
There's just, yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like there is, and that's not to say that they don't do good work right after that, or they might not come back, but there is like a peak and then there is a decline after that. And I feel like Taylor Swift will forever be the Eras Tour. And this sort of past, you know, couple yeah. of years where she has this crazy tour that, you know, sells out all of these arenas. She is making money hand over fist. She's at the Super Bowl for dating this guy. She's, you know, she's just everywhere. And really, no one is saying a bad thing about her. And she's, yeah, she wins the Grammy. And I think that there's just like, that is now over. And we are entering a new period of Taylor Swift where she is becoming more of just like,
but don't
she's
you think
less
she's aware of that? Like, don't you think that's what this album is about?
I don't know that that's what this album
like,
is about.
There's so much angst about the fame and fortune and perception of her, and there's so much about like what she wants in the future and like what she wants to prioritize.
Yeah, but I don't
like it's sort of the death of her, it's the death of her relationship, but it's also the death of her like, I mean, I don't want to say reputation, but like this nice girl or like pop girly or whatever. Like, I think that's why there's a couple lines in the album where she's like, oh, the eras fade to gray. Like, I think she's wanting to kind of allow herself space to not be everyone's everything and instead prioritize what she wants to prioritize, which seems to be writing and artistic, like, you know, endeavors, like the manuscript. I feel like there's just songs on here that talk about that,
like maybe, but that just doesn't ring true with I feel like her like doing the pap walks and the releasing 9 different kinds of vinyls for this.
But she hasn't like been promoting this album. She hasn't done, you know, SNL or talk shows or interviews. Like, she hasn't been doing, when was she last paparazzi'd?
I mean, I guess I don't know exactly.
She's had
but
like
a
whole month off of tour and she really did nothing with it as far as promoting this album goes. And I think obviously she wants, like, she cares about being known and she cares about her numbers, but I don't think she's in denial about this being her echelon, you know?
I mean, yeah, like, I guess I don't. Maybe that is true, but I at the same time, I don't think that she's like, okay, like that was a bit much for me. I'm gonna go off and spend some time at a cottage and take a break. And I'm not, you know, I want to get out of the limelight a bit. Like that, I mean, she just released another album. She's going to presumably release 2 more Taylor's versions. She's still on tour. She's in a very high profile relationship. Like, I don't get the sense that she is looking for like necessarily anonymity or that. I mean, not that that's even possible for her to get. But,
I'm not
like,
saying
yeah.
that far. I'm saying she's come to terms with not like with you with this being the decline, you know, the beginning, not in a dramatic way, but more like, you know, she's paid her dues. She's earned her scars. And now she's like, yeah, I actually do want to settle down. I want children. I want this. You know, like, I want to just be able to write rather than worry about always outdoing my past self.
I guess. I mean, I did not do a close enough reading of all of the lyrics to, like, argue with you about that kind of thing. Yeah. I just think, like, based on everything that we have seen from Taylor Swift in the past, that does not seem to be her personality move in general. And even with, like, this necessarily. I feel like if anything, it's more of a like a kind of like I gotta sort of, she's afraid of losing, so she kind of has to quit and like pivot, if that makes sense. I don't know, rather than sort of like a graceful step down, because she is very concerned with her legacy as well. I don't know. I think it's I think it will be interesting to see what she does in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Because this album, like, I don't know what response she thought that this was going to get. And obviously, like, you know, it's it was the most streamed album ever, whatever. She's going to be doing great. But I think it will be interesting to see how she responds to, like, not necessarily having the same level of clamor about her that there was in the past, like, couple of years. Because she also gets very defensive about certain things.
Yeah.
And if there's going to be more criticism of her kind of, like, you know, lurking around and people feel that they're more able to do that, I wonder if we'll get some more of the like Ginny and Georgia kind of type things, or if she'll try to do some sort of like image rehabby kind of stuff like she did with the Miss Americana. Obviously, this is a very different situation than the Reputation era stuff, because it's not like she's been canceled. I think people are just sort of getting a little bored of her, which is different. But I don't know. I'm intrigued to see how she handles this, because she's, like we were talking about earlier, she just is such like an interesting human being in the way she responds to things. And I sort of don't necessarily foresee her taking a bunch of people saying, well, this album was kind of long and boring, very well. Because even with, what album was it that like people said it wasn't cohesive enough and she got upset about?
Red.
Which feels like sort of a lesser complaint than this. Like, that was like, oh, there's a lot of good songs in here, but it wasn't cohesive. And this, it's like, there's way too many songs. They're all kind of bad.
I mean, I do want to point out that most of the reviews have been fairly positive, even if they're mixed. Like, it's still a 76 on Metacritic or whatever.
Yeah, but I think it has like a 50 in the audience score.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, audience. I mean, yeah, audience scores are,
I guess I'm not really looking at Metacritic audience scores on albums very often, but that did seem low to me.
Yeah, I think there's a general, I mean, it's the same thing that happens with like, there's a lot of review bombing when it's users, and there's a lot of, especially with an artist or a movie that's controversial for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't trust those always, but I think, yeah, on one hand, I think the general public does not like this. And on the other hand, I think Swifties are very obsessed with this. And I think that kind of speaks to what I'm getting at, which is that Taylor was someone who thought all of her self-respect was dependent on public perception. And I think we've had to watch that sort of deconstruct in real time over the course of like, what, the last six albums. Do I fully trust that she's processed that? No, of course not. I think that that will continue to be a push and pull in her, you know, perfectionist tendencies. But I do think that this album, being so kind of self-aware that she's not necessarily the best person, or that she does make a lot of selfish choices, or that she's fine with people, with admitting that she's sometimes can be bad or problematic or whatnot. I think it's interesting to think of like what she hoped to get out of this, which I don't think was necessarily the same. I don't know. I think it's hard because in Miss Americana, she was so pissed and bummed out that Reputation didn't work. And then with Lover, she was so ready to like prove that, oh, see, I'm back to myself. I'm so happy and happy, happy, happy. And then the COVID kind of pushed that aside and made her have to come to terms with like, oh, my relationship's failing. How am I going to process this through music? I'm going to release this album no one really thinks anything of. It became one of her biggest albums. It became the thing that relaunched her career in a real way, making her more relevant and interesting to the masses. And then that allowed her to go back to the fame she was so craving by doing something like Midnights and having the Eras Tour. But now she gets to kind of choose her adventure on whether she wants to stick to that route or just stick with the songwriting and have that be enough. And it seems like the storytelling and the artistry is what is speaking to her right now, rather than the constant, you know, promotion and
yeah, but wasn't the storytelling and the artistry of this album sort of bad?
I think like I said, I've come around on like 50% of it, so numbers wise that's still a full album of good music.
I feel like you're sort of giving the Reductress headline, which I loved, which was woman doing her best to like new Taylor Swift album lest she face the consequences.
I know that's how I feel, but there's actually some, like, I was thinking of, because we were going to do this whole, like, oh, what three songs do you love? What three songs do you hate? And so I was listening, like, more carefully. And there's, like, right off the top of my head, like, five songs I absolutely love.
Well, and out of 31, like, that is.
Yeah, I mean, know. I'm not saying this is her best. I still think it's a weak album. And I still think it's. I don't think it works. I like the idea of it more than I like the individual tracks of it. And that's what I'm talking about with I like the elements of it. I like what there was an attempt here. And I still trust her as a songwriter because there's some really beautiful songs on here.
Like anecdotally, I think that just like on Instagram or whatever, like when she has released, I guess, Midnights, but also like some of the Taylor's versions since then, I have seen a lot of hubbub on my Instagram of people like posting things and, oh, this was so good and I'm obsessed with this, blah, 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 blah. I feel like I saw a lot less of that this time. Most of it was from the people who I know are big Taylor Swift fans, and some of the sort of like more casual fans, I think there was less of that. This brings us to another point of like, she's on the Eras Tour now, which is continuing on.
Mm-hmm.
Will this get added in? Will she save this and do it separately? Will this sort of be something that she's like, eh, like, let's sort of forget this happened where it's like not really going to be a part of this, but she's not going to really like,
no, you know, I don't, she's like, I don't, not going to tour it specifically. Separately. I don't see there being a Tortured Poets tour. I don't see her changing the set list for the Eras Tour just because of the, I mean, maybe that's what she's been doing for a month, is building out the visuals and costumes and choreography. But I don't think she can add, you know, 20 minutes to an already 3:15 runtime. So I don't know. I do honestly think that the way she posits this, where she's like, this was mine, but now it's yours. Like, do I think she might be protesting too much? Of course. But I think she's trying to pocket this, close the chapter, and move on. I do not think, and like, if she turns out to do a whole tour of this, I will be shocked, because I just do not think that she thinks there's a tour here, because I think then there'd be a lot more promotion around that.
Well, also, it's kind of, it would be sort of a weird album to tour, I think, just like she hasn't really done a slow tour like that, because Folklore and Evermore are obviously part of this tour. And then also she does still have two Taylor's versions that are, you know, coming down the pike at some point. So it feels like that all kind of needs to happen. Maybe this was just sort of like a side like release or whatever. And then once all of that is done and the album is done, or those are done, the Eras Tour is done, she's done making her directorial debut, that she'll, you know, write another album and sort of have another go at that.
Should we talk about your favorites?
Yes. I mean, do you want to guess which they are? Sure. I feel like I have no, like, I literally could not even begin to guess what your favorites and least favorites are. So I feel like you just have to.
Okay, I'm gonna guess those. Because you already said one. What did you say? You said the Black Dog. No, you didn't. You said the Bolter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Bolter, and I'm gonna say I Can Do It with a Broken Heart. In Florida.
I felt like I Can Do It with a Broken Heart was a little cloying. Like, sort of reminded me of, what was the song off of Midnights that It reminded me of one of the songs off of Midnights, which I did like more, but that I was kind of like, I feel like we're doing the same thing again here, and I am liking it less. Oh, Karma, I guess. But anyways, I think the ones that I liked were the Bolter. I did really like the Kim Kardashian song.
Yeah.
Even though, like, again, I thought the metaphors were, like, sort of confusing going on in there. And I don't really like the fact that she's still on Kim Kardashian, but I thought just, like, as a song, it was one of the better ones. And then I liked Who's Afraid of Little Old Me.
Oh, yeah,
I thought that was good. Also, like, a good one. The Florence and the Machine song, I think I struggled with a bit because I like Florence and the Machine, and I was sort of like, this is, like, enough of Florence and the Machine to make me want a Florence and the Machine song, but not enough to actually be one. So it was kind of like a weird disappointment. You know what I mean? It's like where you get, like, just a taste of something, but, like, not quite enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, I...
It's about Dateline, which is funny.
I did also think that it was interesting. It's like, I'm like, has Taylor Swift ever been to Florida? Like, I mean, obviously she has been for, like, touring and stuff, but it's like she's singing about Destin, I think.
She did grow up in Tennessee, so I was reading that a lot of Tennesseans go to Destin. I don't know if she ever did, but in, like, high school or junior high or whatever.
Yeah, I was sort of like, okay, this is interesting. I hated it was really just So Long London.
Oh, really?
I was like, this is so dull. And...
Well, yeah.
I was like, what are we doing here? Like, because the thing is, it's not that I am like, oh, we need bops, even though I like having some bops. It's like, I have liked some of Taylor Swift's slower songs. Like, I think Marjorie is one of Taylor Swift's best songs, and it is so, it's like not fast. It's very slow. It's very in the vein of these things.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, that song, the lyrics, like what it's trying to do, are so specific and so honed in and so well done and concocted. And like, that was not going on here. Like, this album just felt messy to me. And it also felt slow, and there was also no bops. So it was like, really, we are losing on every capacity. Yeah. And then randomly, you just sort of have Jack Antonoff's like synthy things in the background of songs that feel like they should have sort of just been like a piano song or a guitar song, you know what I mean?
For sure. That's
it's like, why is this like vague synth disco going on over this like very wordy, poorly written, like jumble of metaphors? Okay, what are your favorites or least favorites? Actually, let's hear your least favorites. I'm like, I'm more intrigued by
that. Okay, yeah. My least favorites is The Alchemy. I literally want to throw myself off of a bridge when I hear it. It's like, so, talk about cloying. Like, talk about Twee. Like, the way she uses like football metaphors or language, or like, oh, he's in the league, or like, oh, touch me during Grand Theft Auto. I'm like, shut up, Taylor.
Oh, yeah, the Grand Theft Auto line. You know what? I also hated Cassandra. I was like, really?
We're doing a
friggin' Greek mythology.
Okay. I thought it was a nicer, like a more mature, like, I think it's the same subject as Thank You, Amy, but I think the metaphor of like this, you know, I actually don't know.
I was also like
mythology. I don't know. Yeah, I was like thinking of like witches being burned or something. I don't know.
No, Cassandra is she's a Greek, I can't remember which story it is, but it's like I think it's the Trojan Horse, where is a prophet and prophesies the Trojan Horse, and they're like, yeah, we don't want that to happen, like that seems lame, like let's kill this girl, and you know, so they kill her, and then it happens. And so it's very Taylor Swift to be like, I was speaking the truth and you stoned me for it. It's like, girl, go back in your private jet and calm down.
I also hated I wrote it down.
I mean, there's so many of them.
I hate it here. I was like, Taylor, you're not the one to handle this messaging right now. Like, don't bring in racism. Like, please just stop. It's embarrassing.
I also didn't love Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus. I was like, what are, like, oh my gosh.
I like that. It's like about, you know, you're watching some, like, isn't that the one about she has his location on? Oh no, that's the Black Dog, which I do love too.
No, I liked that idea. Like, see, that was an interesting idea for a song. And I think that that is one of the like stronger songs here conceptually. There's just not enough of that going on. Like, that's such a specific idea. And it's like, yes, like that is like watching the person who you used to be in love with, like go about their daily life and go do things that you used to do together, but now they're doing them by themselves. Like, great concept for a song.
No, I love that. I think the other one I did not like is Robin, which is just sort of a weird one. I think it was about Aaron Dessner's son. Like, it's about, like, childhood. I don't know. It was like, okay, whatever. I don't
care. Oh, I also didn't like I Look in People's Windows. That was another concept where I was sort of like, where, like, whose windows are you looking at? Like, I get the point of view, but I'm like, you don't do this, Taylor Swift. Like,
in Manhattan.
Like, you're just wandering around neighborhoods. Like, no, you have not gone on a walk in a neighborhood in years. Yes. No, I get it, but I'm like, this, like, no.
No, honestly, the best song I think on the album and one of her best, most recent songs is How Did It End, which is just like so sad. And it's like her coming to terms with how she'll have to explain the breakup to people who only want like the juicy tidbits. I think it's one of the more relatable songs as far as things go. Like, obviously, it's on a much more grand scale, but I think the lyric, I think that's like a flawless song. Like, it didn't feel clunky. It didn't have clunky bits. It was like really beautiful instrumentation. So that was my favorite. And then I do like Down Bad. Like, I feel like that song's getting a lot of hate, but I think it's fun. And it's like pretending.
I can't remember that one.
It's the one where she's like, it's like about being abducted by aliens, but then being put back on Earth and just wanting to be beamed up again. So it's a strong metaphor in that she sticks to it through the whole song. So maybe revisit that one. And then
don't think I'll ever listen to this album again. Like, I can say that with
but
honesty.
I did love But Daddy, I Love Him. And I think it's interesting that I love it because it literally is like, ugh, Taylor, listen to yourself. You're singing about this loser. Like, get over it. Like, he's not only just like gross, he's literally like, oh, like problematic. Like, come on.
I think that of Taylor Swift's boyfriends, that the one who is most similar to her is him.
I know. Well, that's what's funny about this album is she has to like, yeah. And I think there's a bunch of funny drag. Like when she opens the Smallest Man Who Ever Lived and she's like, you're in your Jehovah Witness suit. Like, I'm just like, it's so funny. I also think it's funny that everyone thought this would be like titled after Joe Alwyn's like group chat, but it's actually like, no, Maddie Healy is the one who takes his freaking typewriter places. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, hilarious. To be fair, I do love the 1975s music, but yes, no, he seems like an annoying, insufferable human being.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting, I guess, to see when. I mean, the beauty of the 1975s is I can never understand any of the lyrics to their songs.
Yeah.
And they're also just like weird, inscrutable, you know, like word salad kind of a thing. Yeah. But I'm like, it will be interesting. An editor. Well, it's because it's like,
they have mixed metaphors.
Well, yeah. I mean, they, if you asked me, like, do they have good songwriting ability? Like the vibes and the melodies. Incredible. The lyrics, like, I guess bad. I couldn't tell you like what most of the songs were. Or what they're about. But it'll be interesting to see if any of the songs off of their next album have anything to do with Taylor Swift, or if people like
supposedly
are sort of piecing those
like,
together.
Sources close to him said that his reaction was, well, it could have been worse.
I mean, which I do feel like hilarious. He's sort of gotten off unscathed for the most part.
I know. It's basically like, I think it's because we all saw it. Like, we all knew it. Like, there's absolutely nothing that surprises me about his behavior, right? Like, this idea of him being a love bomber or like leading her on, being like, of course I want to marry you, girl. Like, you're the one, man. I just need to like grow up a little bit and then I'm yours type thing. Like, that's, if I had to guess what he was like, that's exactly what I'd paint. So, there's not the same sort of reveal that her.
The funniest thing that has come out of her relationship with Maddie Healy is not anything on this album. It is the fact that she now that she now is in this weird fake friendship with Ice Spice, and the two of them are like hanging out, and it's just like, and Ice is like, my girl Taylor Swift released a new album, like, isn't it great at Coachella? And it's like, Ice Spice and Taylor Swift are the two like least similar people. Like, there's an opposite end, and the fact that they're like hanging out at football games and like shouting out each other's albums, it's like, this is, I love that this is what
I forced her to do.
It's so entertaining.
I find Taylor Swift so freaking fascinating. And even this like Coachella trip she went on with Travis, like, I'm just like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to, like, you know, cut this out of my system. I just am obsessed with imagining what is going through her head. Like, she's just like a little chameleon, but she's also just like always her predictable self. I don't know. I'm just like, I want to know everything.
I think, like, she's a narcissist, and I think, like, she has, like, delayed.
Oh, I finally dated guys my own age who have dartboards on the back of their doors. It's like, girl, what are we doing?
Does she go to therapy?
No, she said that she doesn't.
And it's like,
maybe that's changed. That was in
the and it's like era. That is the most like spot on thing.
This,
like,
is her, I think, therapy.
I think that she's a narcissist, and I think that she also has the whatever that syndrome is called, where it's like you don't age past the age of like 15 or whatever.
Peter Pan's.
Yeah, or whatever, because it's like, she's like stunted growth. It's like the thing where like people who go into prison come out the same age that they went in, you know, that it's like, that's what's going on
in
with
her
Swift.
Asylum she was raised in. Yeah,
yes, and yet she became a billionaire, so yeah. It's
she,
like,
can do it, so you can do it too, Matt.
I guess I'm like, the thing is, I think it would, like, I'm like, if I was a billionaire, obviously, like, I think money and fame, like, makes everybody worse, but I'm like, I swear I would be better if I had a billion dollars than she would.
If I had $1 billion.
I mean, I think that getting $1 billion as a 32-year-old is very different than getting, or, you know, whatever, than becoming famous when you're 14.
Well, to be fair, her billion status only happened when she started recording her album. So you have time, you know? It could happen.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, the fame thing or whatever. I guess it's more about the being famous than less about the money.
Yeah. No, I think I think it's hard, because I do feel like if this had been trimmed down, there's a world in which you accepted this for what it was. But I know you'll never revisit any of them. And I really don't think, I don't fault anyone who doesn't want to, like, dig into this album. I think it's, you either enjoy it or you don't, and we'll see if she's happy with that being the way it is. I think she is, but you might be right.
I doubt that she is. I think that we're going to get some word some way or another, whether it's on an album in the future or a doc or something about
that
she was not
pleased.
Like,
how the Reputation album was, like, literally panned. Like, no, this is like, oh, it's mixed, you know? So it's not like a failure.
Yeah, yes, but I don't think it's what she wanted. I mean, I don't think anybody wants this response to their album, but I do. It is like, yeah, she has 31 songs here. If she cut it down to 12 and released that as an album, like,
okay, I'll build you the perfect album.
Like, would it have been her best album? Like, no, I don't think so. But would it have been something that people could have really, like, complimented and praised? And I think the thing is, there's a certain group of people, myself included, who are looking for ways to easily say, oh, this is bad about Taylor Swift. Like you're going into this not looking to root for her. And when you release a song, an album that is this long and this boring, it is so easy for everyone to be like, it's too long and too boring. You know what I mean? Like, it's such like nobody even has to come up, like, sort of like hunt around for reasons why it might be bad. It's like, no, it's just like so obvious.
Yeah, no, you would never have liked this. But I did want to say, I also am very uncomfy with I'm Gonna Get You Back, because that feels way too close to Olivia Rodrigo's superior Get Him Back. And I feel like if she's not,
maybe
I feel
Olivia,
like, there's gotta be a duel
sue
there.
Her.
Yeah, they've gotta show up.
Get that songwriting credit,
two,
Olivia.
Please. Yeah. So I can't listen to that one. It makes me too anxious. It makes me too embarrassed.
I mean, I also don't love Olivia Rodrigo necessarily, but I'm like,
that you're Team
Wow. Olivia. Well, yeah, just because Taylor Swift should not be suing anybody.
Okay, okay, unless... she didn't sue it, Olivia, just to be clear.
Okay, whatever. Just to be clear. Whatever. Okay. It's like, she should not be litigious with people who are like not, you know, it's like, let her have this money. Like, you do not need more money.
Yeah.
That's like, it's one thing to sue that guy for a dollar or whatever, who was what, like a stalker or whatnot?
No, but he sexually assaulted her.
Okay, yes. So. That. Perfect. Great. Let's sue him for a dollar. You know what I mean? But like, let's not go after, like, you know, these pop stars. It's giving very Kiss the Ring energy, which I'm like, we don't need more
yeah.
of.
Yeah, no, I agree. I would love to sit down with Olivia Rodrigo and get her side of it. I want to know so bad. But we never will, so.
I mean, maybe Olivia Rodrigo will write a song about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
She seems of the mode of Taylor Swift in that regard.
Oh, for sure, 100%.
She could write a cloaked ballad about, you know,
she'll
some...
She'll write her own Thank You, Amy. But it'll be Tess. Taylor.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't even begin.
It'd be like, thank Why? You, Laura, right? Because then it would be Taylor. Yeah, so thank you,
thank
Laura.
Thank you, and then what, L?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we need an L-O-R.
Yeah.
Thank you, but Laura is L-A-U.
Oh, okay, thank you, thank you, Lord.
Perfect. Can't wait for Olivia Rodrigo's yeah. next Christian hit, Thank You, Lord. It's what we've been wanting. I mean, which I do feel like, though, that would be pretty easy to put the metaphors in there about, like, you know, gotta
Taylor
make the sacrifices
yeah, exactly.
to God, you know, yeah. he wants half my farm.
And like, Taylor loves a religious metaphor, so it's like a double... entendre.
Yeah, a real whammy. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to reach out to Olivia Rodrigo's people and pitch this as a song idea.
Yeah.
Then we can get Taylor Swift to write a song about us that's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I invited you into my home. You drank yeah. a Diet Coke near my fridge. Then you backstabbed me.
Yeah, I would be so honored, honestly. That's probably why Maddie Healy is like, oh, yeah, this is great. It's like, boom, 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 boom.
I mean, honestly, all press is good press. Yeah. And I think, Matty Healy is, like, British and drunk. And he's like, you know what? Like, the things I did were bad, but it's not, like, cancelable necessarily. Yeah. And I'll be fine.
Well, like, it's like, if racism isn't going to stop him, then Taylor Swift being mad he ghosted her isn't going to do anything.
Oh, well, yeah, 100%.
He's fine. Cute.
Okay. Well, anyways, this was Tortured Poets Department. Stay tuned for in a month when Taylor Swift releases her next album of 48
yeah,
B-listy tracks.
I would be so lucky.
When do we think, final question, do we think it's Reputation next or is it the Taylor Swift album? And when do we think that will be coming out?
I think the pattern is one album, then two re-recordings the next year, which seems late.
So you think it'll be next spring
that we get something else? I think what it'll be is debut this... Well, it's already summer. Maybe debut...
I could see her doing something like in the like October-November yeah. time frame.
I think she knows Reputation is like the it girl of the era, and there has to be some sort of like hunger for that acceptance after not getting it the first round. So I feel like she'll close with Reputation.
Yeah. But when does the Eras Tour end?
November or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a long year. It's a full year.
But I feel like she's not going to release both of those then before the end of that.
Yeah, I would doubt it. I mean, obviously Taylor Swift is shorter, but not by a lot. I mean, I think it's still like 14 tracks with the bonus tracks she did on, like, you know.
Well,
like,
and you know, versions. She's gonna do more.
Yeah, exactly.
from the vault kind of thing.
So I feel like it will be its own moment, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if she releases that, like, sometime this fall, and then releases Reputation, like, in the next spring.
Yeah.
Then she's done with the tour. Then that frees her up for, like, the following fall. Like, fall, what would that be, 2025, to release whatever her next album is.
Her Travis Kelce engagement album.
Yes. Or her movie, because when
lest
we forget, that is coming down the pipeline, and that is the Taylor Swift project I'm most excited for. The music video?
Yeah.
I did. I mean, it was shot by, like, a famous DP, so...
He's been her DP on most of them.
Oh, he has?
I think so. She, again, loves to collect loyalists.
Really? Rodrigo Pretoro has done more things?
I know she had a big name on her other ones, but maybe it was a different guy.
Because he did the Killers of the Flower Moon. But I could be wrong. He could have done more music videos and I just didn't really realize it. Oh, yeah, no, he did. He did Willow, Cardigan, and The Man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe so.
Because he also did Barbie and The Irishman.
I know. I mean, that's the thing, is like, it was beautiful, but I don't think it worked visual, like, story wise. I was like, okay, Taylor.
I don't feel like she's had a, like, what is her best music video since she started doing her own music videos? I feel probably like she really hasn't had a great one.
I would agree, but I liked The Man, I guess.
You heard it here first, everybody. Taylor Swift. Or Shelby doesn't like Taylor Swift's music videos. She didn't like this album. She thinks Taylor's bad. She's done with her. And that's the end of the episode.
To varying degrees.
That's the final
word. There is some truth in there, just like there is in Taylor's album. So
Taylor Swift, Shelby is doing her best to like the new Taylor Swift album, lest you face the consequences. Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.